Episode 331, dated Monday, March 18th, 2024.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. My name is Bob Branco, and we are at episode 331, dated Monday, March 18th, 2024. Before we continue with all that we need to talk about today in a wide, wacky world of sports, let me introduce our panelists that we currently have. We have Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening. Mitch Pomerantz from Pasadena, California, where it is 74, partly cloudy, and spring, thankfully, has finally arrived.
A little earlier than on schedule, but that's okay. We're not going to complain about that.
No.
Peter Alchil.
Quack, 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 quack. Goose Bay, Oregon is cloudy and raw and not spring-like today. Quack, but it is, it's getting there. I think next week we're going to get some nice weather. Quack, quack.
Let's hope it's nice over there, Peter, and it sounds like you're getting all your ducks in a row. Okay, we are still awaiting the arrival of Reverend Michael Garrett and Don Wardlow.
Michael Garrett's here.
Oh, Michael, hi. There you are. Welcome, Michael.
Yes. Welcome to a beautiful 70-degree day in Missouri City, Texas.
I'm jealous again. Is Don Wardlow here yet? Just to give everybody an update on Luther King, he is slowly recuperating. He's had a very serious bout with his voice. It's been affecting him now for the better part of 2 months, I believe. And I do want to thank Mitch Pomerantz for graciously filling in for Luther during his absence. Mitch, we really appreciate your time and efforts, as we do with everybody else, of course.
No problem.
Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for our Sports Roundtable to be aired. Okay, let's start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline, thank you for posting our shows. Our media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, who archives Sports Roundtable on my website, which is www.brancoevents.com. Go there, arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcasts. Click on them, and you will hear most of our archives. From latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie. Whack.
Okay. So, we have a lot to talk about. Justin Fields has been traded to the Steelers. And, of course, we have 1 month left in the NBA season. I think teams are starting to position themselves accordingly. We can kick that around. March Madness has arrived. I kind of questioned the need for a selection committee. In fact, let me start out with that topic, if I may. It seems to me that the selection committee, although most of its members are probably fair when they analyze and study who should get into the NCAA tournament, there might be some bias, maybe, amongst some of the committee members. And I'm going to make a proposal that the selection process should be determined statistically based on positioning of all of the inner tournaments. There are numbers. Everybody loves statistics, so why not take advantage of all the statistics that are possible and all of the formulas that are possible in order to set up the appropriate seating in the appropriate brackets? I think that would get rid of the bias that people are speculating is happening with the selection process. You may disagree, and that's perfectly okay.
Well, I have a question for you then, Bob.
Sure.
Don't you think that even in the, if you go by statistics alone, there could be some bias because records, you know, I think some of the selection committee probably looks at strength of schedule, you know, along with win loss. So even if you do it purely by win loss, there still could be some bias.
Well,
somebody's going to be left out.
If the selection committee depends on strength of schedule. Obviously, there's a formula to determine strength of schedule, so stats can determine that too. At least that's what I'm assuming.
The problem as I see it is that the NCAA men's and women's basketball are trying to balance a number of different things. They're trying to get the 68 best teams, and at the same time, they're trying to give space for the smaller conferences that really don't, if you were just going to do this on strength of schedule, they would never make the tournament. You know, take, for example, Yale, who won the Ivy League playoff system and are going to be playing, I think, Auburn in the first round. You know, let's be honest, Yale would not, in normal circumstances, make the tournament. You know, they're not one of the 68 best teams in college basketball. They just aren't. And neither are any of the other Ivy League schools. So I think so what happens in the case, there are a number of schools, for example, who won the regular season, you know, in their, and then lost the playoff in their, and the way the rule works is the winner of the playoff makes the tournament. And if the team with the better record, they make the playoffs too. But in the process, an equally deserving team gets knocked out, which is what happened. A number of teams like my Oregon Ducks, quack, quack, made the tournament by winning their Pac-12 tournament, but they were not going to make the tournament otherwise, you know, but they had a series of three or four really good games. They beat Arizona, Mitch's favorite Pac-12 team, and, you know, are in the tournament, you know, but should they be in the tournament based on regular season? No, but that's the way the system works. If you really wanted to get the top 68 teams, a lot of the smaller conferences just wouldn't get a bid, you know, like the Ivy League, and there are a bunch of schools, conferences like that all around the country. So that's the problem.
There's no way to do it fairly unless you increase the number to 96 or 108 something, you know.
Even if you did that, it would still, somebody would still think it was unfair. There is no strictly objective way of putting these teams into brackets. I mean, the fact that North Carolina is the number one seed in the West, you know, I'd like to see it be a little more geographic, but I know what they're trying to do. But, you know, Arizona, my not favorite team in the Pac-12, Arizona lost to Oregon and several other allegedly top teams like Houston and there was one, oh, North Carolina, I think it was North Carolina, lost their conference champions. And I heard something interesting this morning that some of these schools, they know they've made the tournament. They know they're going to likely be a number one seed. If they're playing their third game in a row, which is absurd to begin with, four in a row is horrific, but three in a row, you never play three games back to back to back. So by the time you're playing your third game, even if you've made the top four and missed and had a bye day, you know, they don't have that much to play for.
Yeah.
And so if you base it strictly on statistics and strength of schedule, you know, you're going to leave some guys out. You're going to leave the mid-majors out. But I think the statistics don't take the human element into consideration. And I think even if you did it that way, you're always going to have two or three teams that get left out. What was it? This year there were three. Every year for as long as we've had a 68 team tournament, we've had three or four teams that got left out. And I just don't think there's a totally objective way of doing it without knocking out the mid-majors. And several of those mid-majors, you know, get into the Sweet 16 and even a little further, as we noted last year. So, you know, there really is no way of doing it short of, and the guy that for a number of years, he still does USC football, but he for a few years did USC basketball, Pete Arbogast. And he said, why don't we just take every team and have a 300 and some odd team tournament. I mean, if you want to do it that way, you might as well start the tournament around December 1st. But nonetheless, now this is probably the best you're going to get. And these folks try to be as objective as possible. And for the most part, I think they do a pretty decent job.
So I'll tell you what interests me more than this issue. I don't know if any of you saw this, but the tournament below the NCAA is the NIT, which is that's still a decent tournament. And you get, I think there's 32 teams that make that tournament. And some of the top teams that did not make the NCAA tournament are electing not to play in the NIT tournament.
Actually, Peter, right. The top three, St. John's, and I forget the other two, but the top three that got left out have opted out of NIT.
And that does happen upon occasion, Don. You're right. But this and welcome, Don.
Thanks, guys.
But this is unusual. But you know, the top three teams chose not to play. And the answer, the question is why? And the answer is nuts. So the NCAA in their infinite stupidity has decided to do their free agency. What's the word? I'm drawing a blank. Their free agency time, you know, the portal,
the transfer portal.
It starts today. It starts today. Why they started today when the tournament starts is beyond me. So that leaves the coaches with like, you know, okay, do I want to, you know, keep the team together and play in the tournament? Or if I know I'm going to lose people and want to replace them, it doesn't make sense for me to keep the team together if I know I'm going to lose half my team. And I guess that's what the St. John's and other people decided to do. You know,
why are they starting the portal today?
I have no idea. That's why I said in the NCAA's infinite stupidity. The NCAA seems to do things that make no sense to us, to normally intelligent people.
Gentlemen, even beyond that, and it happens in football as well as basketball. I have a real problem with players opting out of the tournament or opting out of the bowl games. It's horrible. You know, USC, we're in not a real big bowl this year, but thankfully our backup quarterback was pretty decent. But, you know, this has been going on for a few years now where these young men decide the H with my school that gave me an opportunity to make something of myself and to showcase my talents. And then when it comes down to a bowl game, the last opportunity they're going to have to play with that uniform on, they say, well, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't care about the school. And I mean, that's beyond the transfer portal. That's basically giving the middle finger to the school that gave you your chance.
I'll give you a good example of that, Mitch. Okay. So in the semifinals, Texas lost to Washington by 6 points. We played them last year in the Alamo Bowl. Our two top running backs, Bijan Robinson, who's now an Atlanta Falcon, and Roschon Johnson, who's now a Chicago Bear, both of them opted out of that game. I would have loved to have seen the result in that game if both of those guys had played.
Yep. Yep.
So I guess I have two reactions, which of course you're right. But what I find interesting about this is not a player's decision not to play in the NIT. It's the coach's decision. This is a coach's matter. It's not a player's matter. It's a coach's decision.
That's right.
Which strikes me as sort of the next leap forward to, I'm not sure what the right word is, and the only thing I'll say about it, Mitch, of course you're right. The only defense the players give is, what if I get hurt? You know, most of the folks who don't decide not to play are being seriously considered for drafting in the NFL. That's the main reason they don't play. And, you know, if they get seriously hurt, their draft position is going to get seriously altered.
Yeah.
They're going to get less money.
Well, you know, you could step out your front door tomorrow and get hit by a car. You know, anything's possible.
Right.
And you can get hurt in the combine. You can get, there's all manners of ways in football to get mutilated. Yeah.
Right. And by the way, Peter,
let's be honest.
Is it a coach's decision or the athletic director's decision to not play in the NIT? Maybe it's the AD's decision.
It could be. It could be. But it's not a player's thing. Maybe the players had input in it.
Right. Right.
It could be a combination because perhaps the coaches talk to the players and they ask, some coaches will ask, do you guys really want to play? We've been snubbed. Do you guys really want to play in the low tournament? You know, and the guys probably said, no, you know,
that's possible.
Not the trophy we want.
Especially if the coach framed it the way you framed it, Michael.
But there are so many teams. There are so many teams who don't even participate in any tournament. The people in the NIT should be grateful that they're in the NIT.
Hey, there's a tournament even lower down than the NIT. There's that conference. What do they call it? Conference commissioners. I forget what they call it.
It's a weird one. And it should be
called the participation tournament.
No, but they're a step below. Like I think Brown, who was the runner up in the Ivy League championship is in that tournament. You know, there were a team that was well above 500. They weren't eligible for great glory, but you know, it gives them a chance to, you know, build their team. I don't have much of a problem with it. I don't take it very seriously, the tournament, but anyway, I guess the only defense that I have for the players, of course you're right. If anybody can go out and get hit by a car, look, but you know, let's be honest, football is a violent sport. And the chances of you getting hurt are much better being playing in a game than it is stepping out of your house and being hit by.
By the way, I have to tip. It's Don here is the big women's basketball college basketball maven here. I have got to tip my USC cap to USC women. We were the number one seed. And I was going to ask you, Don, because I know next to nothing about women's college basketball. What are the chances of my Lady Trojans making it all the way?
My goodness. I don't know about all the way, but oh my goodness. I'm glad they, you know, got a number one. I didn't hear if or when UCLA got picked. I don't know if they even were picked at all, but. I really want to see Juju Watkins play against somebody like a UConn or some of the other, you know, high seeds in that bracket. I don't have the bracket in front of me, but I know.
How about seeing her play against Caitlin Clark?
Oh yeah. Oh, what a what a delight that would be. Any of those, because she's only a freshman. That's the best part of it.
Yep.
All of it. And, you know, she could transfer out of USC and play for somebody, you know, a really good coach who can really make the most of who and what she is. And who knows if that might happen.
I do want to get
our coach this year did a tremendous job. And if she goes anywhere, it'll be to the WNBA. And hopefully that won't happen because I have a real problem with freshmen leaving and playing in either. Women's
I don't
or
think
the
they're eligible
NBA.
To go to the women's NBA. I don't think a freshman can do that.
Oh, good.
I think the rules are different for women than men, actually, if I'm ever
used to it. It ought to be the same with the men.
Yeah, well, I think the women are more restricted than men, but I may be wrong about that. Don, before you move on, I know, Bob, I know you want to move on, but I haven't had a chance to sort of check the brackets. UConn, I assume, is somewhere in a top four somewhere, four seed somewhere.
They got a third seed in the one of the Portland, Oregon regionals, and their number one would be USC if they got as far as the round of 16 or the round of 8. But frankly, I don't see UConn getting to Portland, Oregon this time. I don't think they'll get to the Sweet 16.
You said there were three seed?
Yes, number three seed in one of the two Portland, Oregon.
So that means that their first two series are at home, right?
Yes, they are. That's true.
Yeah. I, you know,
but that
they might lose, but they'll leave.
Yes, they still could. I mean, remember Notre Dame beat them soundly at their own house at Yemple, which was just a horrible thing.
I note that Princeton made the tournament or playing West Virginia. I don't know precisely when or where. It's Saturday, I know. So we are going to monitor that, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the NBA, there's a month to go in the regular season, believe it or not. It's been flying by. And I think right now teams are positioning themselves. The Boston Celtics have a 5-game advantage. Believe it or not, folks. I'll tell you what, if the Celtics don't win it all this year, there ought to be an investigation. I mean, they're playing like champions, except for those two losses against Cleveland and Denver, which I'm not shocked about those losses because it is what it is. You're going to play great teams eventually, no matter how superior you are. So if you look at the way this team, they're demolishing teams. I know some of the teams that they're demolishing are not very good. The Wizards are the worst defensive team in basketball this year. And the Celtics are demolishing them even without three or four of their stars on the court because of injury and whatnot. The point is they have, I think, a 5-game lead now over the second best team in the NBA, which guess who that is, folks? Guess who the second best NBA team is at the moment?
Is it Oklahoma City?
Oklahoma or Oklahoma?
Oklahoma is the second best team in basketball right now. The Thunder.
Record-wise.
Record-wise, I know, and Denver's right there, and Denver will likely pass them. But it's interesting how well Oklahoma City's doing.
I want to jump on my rant for the day. Yesterday, I was in getting ready to face the day Sunday morning. Flipped on ESPN and caught the Bucks Phoenix game.
Oh yeah.
It sounded a lot like what the NBA All-Star game turned out to be, because even with the regular season, no one was playing defense. It was 140 to 129, and that was without Antetokounmpo. You know, I know people say that the NBA was bad in the 90s and you know, there was holding and there was a lot of defensive stuff that nobody particularly liked because it slowed down the game. But can someone please play some defense in the NBA?
I heard scoring has gone down in the past month in the NBA. There was a stat that
really?
Was mentioned on the radio yesterday. Scoring in the past month or so has dropped a little bit. And one of the explanations that I heard was because the playoffs are coming, teams are getting more focused on a complete game in order to position themselves.
Well, I know, for example, the Knicks. I don't know if you've been following the Knicks, but I think it was last week, there were a couple of scores that were positively 90s-ish, you know, 98 to 96. I think it was one game where it was 95 to 74. I don't have quite the score right. But the Knicks seem to be playing that old school defense. My question with regards to the Knicks is, can they ratchet it up when everybody else starts playing defense in the playoffs? I mean, that's the question that I worry. And by the way, my worry about the Celtics, and I think they are the best team, except maybe for Denver, is somebody made a good point that their coach, among all the other teams in the, you know, who are really good, you know, fill in the blank, is the least experienced coach in the playoffs. And that might bite them. That might bite them, you know, because coaches can make bad calls at the wrong moment and can cost teams a series.
One of the biggest knocks on Joe Mazzulla right now, Peter, is that he doesn't know when to take a timeout.
Well, yeah, it's just that kind of thing, right? You know, that kind of thing is critical in the playoff game. You know, if it's 2-2 and they don't call a timeout at the right time, they might lose the series. So that
if he goes up against an old cagey veteran like a Doc Rivers,
that's right.
And that may cause some problems for him.
Even though the Bucks, you know, we keep going back and forth, Mitch, about are the Bucks, you know, that good or not. And sometimes I think that they're turned a corner and they're playing better defense. And then there are times when they go back to their old ways and are terrible. And they're like the, you know, you said the Lakers are the most inconsistent team in the West. Right now, the Bucks are the most inconsistent team in the East.
Yeah.
Is sort of the way I look at it. And it's hard to judge.
And the Lakers did what I expected them to. They lost to the Kings last week. We talked about it. And they went 0-4 this year against the Kings. Yeah.
And that takes talent.
That takes
Anthony Davis apparently, and I didn't catch the game, but Davis got poked in the eye and he didn't play the last three quarters of the game. So that might have made a difference too.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, but nonetheless, going 0-4 against the Kings.
Yeah.
That's some talent. You know, that takes a, you know, it's like,
The Kings record is not that bad. So they're a decent team.
Alexa,
they're decent.
They're decent, but they're not. The Lakers should go 0-4 against them. You know, 1-3. Okay. Not 0-4. You know, but you're right, Michael. I thought they were worse than they were, but last year they're number 7 in the West.
They're 6th at the moment.
They're tied. There's a 3-way tie for 6th with Phoenix, and I forget who the other team is. There are three-way tie.
As you pointed out, Mitch, directly, Phoenix just isn't very good. Their defense is terrible. You know, I mean,
I'll tell you what, I'll take the top 4 scorers on my team any day. Allen, Durant, Booker, and Beal. I'll take them any day.
That's fine, and you can have their bench too, and we'll see how that works.
They will not be in the Western Conference Finals.
No, they will not.
No, Oklahoma and Denver more likely. With an outside shot, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Mitch, I got a question for you. Wednesday or Thursday, either of those days, are you going to be up at 3:00 in the morning to hear the Dodgers and the Padres from Korea? Cause you can't.
The answer is absolutely positively yes.
Ah, cause
a true baseball fan, a true baseball fan will.
I was going to say, you can't set it and forget it, you know.
But see, Don, frequently I'm up at 3:00 in the morning anyway for whatever reason. So instead of listening to America in the morning on our local ABC affiliate at 3:00 in the morning, I'll be flipping over to KLAC and catching the Dodger game.
I understand if you're already up, and I have a better chance of being already up at 6 than I would at 3. You know, I could be up at 6, and then if I am, I would definitely tune in those games. I am very, very curious to see how the, you know, Padres and Dodgers will play over there.
Well, I'll be setting my alarm just to make sure for 2:55 a.m. What's interesting is KLAC has already announced that they are going to rebroadcast the game at noon.
Oh, really?
On Wednesday and Thursday. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good
deal. They are going to do that. But I'll be listening at 3.
I saw something that said Ohtani is starting to, well, does that mean he's going to play in the field?
Actually, what Dave Roberts said is he will absolutely not pitch this year.
No.
He is starting to throw. And there is, I guess, some thought that if they really needed him in the late innings or an extra inning game, whatever, that they could put him, you know, in right field. You don't want to have him in left. But yeah, they're talking about it. And he said he would be willing to play if he had to.
Interesting.
Mitch, before we move on to talk about whatever else we want to talk about, I just want to say that you and Don have lots of soul.
Oh, no.
Well, that's nice.
And if we ever get together, Peter, we need to go for Korean barbecue, very good.
I've never had that, so I'm up for that. I don't know if that's such things in Florida.
I'd sooner split a 6-pack of Guinness with you or Killian's is my favorite. Killian's.
No, but
the best place to have Guinness though is in Ireland. They say they keep the good stuff over there. And I, you know, having been on vacation there a few years ago, I can tell you it tastes much better when you're drinking it in Dublin.
One more baseball note. Joey Votto, who was a longtime member of the Cincinnati Reds, a perennial first baseman for them, is now a Blue Jay.
Yes, I heard about that. I didn't know if he's managed to stay on the team, but I know he has gotten.
Well, why would a team take a 40-year-old veteran? This is my question. I was asking somebody this today. Why would a team take a 40-year-old veteran and make him sign a minor league deal?
Because he still has to prove himself. Look, he hasn't hit, I don't think he's hit over 250 the last three seasons. So, and of course he wasn't healthy for one of those, but the reason major league teams sign veterans, and the Dodgers have a bunch of guys who they signed to minor league contracts. Half of the pitching staff at Oklahoma City this season will be guys with serious major league experience, but
Red
they
Sox
do
too.
That. Pardon me?
Red Sox too.
Yeah, they do it because it's called depth. And so, for example, the Dodgers will have Chris Owings at Oklahoma City. And when you're only carrying, as the Dodgers are, I think, five infielders, you want to make sure you've got guys who if push comes to shove and they get called up, you know, they know which end is up. So
we had Chris Owings once.
Well, I've always liked him, and I suspect at some point this year he'll get a chance. But like Daniel Hudson, the Dodgers just added him to the 40-man roster, and he was originally, he signed a couple 3 months ago as a minor league, contract, Bob. So it's more common in the major leagues now than it was 15, 20 years ago. And the idea is you have your top prospects in double A and a couple of them maybe to triple A, but you stock your triple A team with guys that you might need some point during the season.
I agree with you. It's happening all over baseball. I do want to welcome participants. So I'm going to ask Chanel. And by the way, Chanel, thank you for being our host for today's game. We appreciate that, for today's program, I mean. And so without further ado, let me ask you if there are any hands raised.
You're welcome. I'm happy to do it. And we do not have any hands at this time.
Well, if that happens, you know to interrupt us.
Yeah,
I
speak
will.
Up and speak we'll up and tell us we'll, what you
tell
us. Make comments about whatever you want to talk about. I don't care what it is.
Well, I'll just let you know about raised hands. How about that?
Within reason.
Yeah, within reason. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mitch, I noticed that one of your best defensive players for the Rams announced his retirement. What's that guy's name?
Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, and I think his career, I think it was 11 years, but as was mentioned earlier in the program, football is a violent sport, and I think what you're seeing more and more are guys saying, you know, I've made my multi-millions,
yeah,
and I'm not gonna literally kill myself. Leighton Vander Esch just announced he was retiring today, and he was in the league 8 years, and he's got spinal stenosis. So he finally decided that his health was more important than his career. So I think you're seeing more and more players in the prime of their careers leaving the sport.
Well, two things. Donald, after the Super Bowl win, Donald, you know, said he might retire, but I guess they talked him into playing.
Yeah, last year.
Because they thought they thought they could repeat, I guess.
Yeah.
And Vander Esch, I think Vander Esch took a big chance coming back when he did. I mean, he could have really seriously.
Yep. Yep.
When you have a moment, we do have a raised hand.
We do have a moment, so. Whoever
All right.
it is, we'll talk to
Teresa,
him.
Teresa, you may unmute.
Hello, Teresa. Welcome to Sports Roundtable. Great to have you with us.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the welcome and acknowledging my hand. First of all, I wanted to say that third conference tournament, whatever you want to call it, besides, of course, the March Madness and then the NIT, I've heard another definition for that besides National Invitational.
That would be the NIT.
Yeah, I've heard it, but I said I've heard it called the Not Invited. But the other one I think you're thinking of is CBI. C is in college, B is in basketball, and then I for Invitational.
That is correct. Thank you so much.
And they even have a women's NIT and also I think a women's CBI as well. And I was kind of following some of to see where some of the women's college, you know, for the March Madness, where they will go and who they'll play, because, you know, it's interesting. I think the women's league is finally getting her recognition, getting her due.
I just want to make a comment, Teresa. There's a little bit of redundancy here in the names of these tournaments. The NIT, the NIT National Invitational Tournament. I get that. CBI, College Basketball Invitational. Well, aren't the teams in the NIT College Basketball?
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know where they came. I think that's been around for at least, more than 10 years, because I remember hearing about it, I want to say in the first decade of the 2000s.
Well, I know it was around 2010, because Princeton was in the CBI 1 year.
Yeah.
And we played St. Louis, and my wife and I went to the game with a bunch of Princeton Yuppie alumni, and we lost, of course, but you know, it was a good game, and I think they went on, St. Louis, that was the semifinals. St. Louis went on to win the tournament. So, you know, I mean, but you know, when it gets redundant after a while, I get your
point. Right. But I think the NIT.
Well, I was going to say, Teresa, when that tournament first got started a number of years ago, it was called the Conference Commissioners Tournament, as I recall.
Okay, you're probably right. But I know NIT, I think it mainly to give recognition to the schools, not so much it's going to make them nationally famous, but giving them some recognition in their, you know, their team. They may not make ESPN, may or may not make ESPN. I don't know, but the local markets in their areas will probably hear the games.
And it does make a difference. Those teams who will win, if they're not losing too many players, they come back and they've had a chance to practice and have some real experience, and they often graduate to the next level and do very well. So, you know,
and those NIT games are going to be televised on ESPN. I was looking to see when the NCAA game would begin on ESPN. And in the meantime, starting tomorrow and continuing Wednesday, ESPN is going to show a bunch of the early round NIT games, and then they may, I don't know who's going to grab them later on once the NCAA gets going. I think that's pretty much contracted to ESPN, the college, the NCAA tournament.
Except remember, Don, that often they try to schedule the NIT during days when the NCAA is not playing, or times when they aren't playing.
Right, that's what they're doing now. The next two days, tomorrow and Wednesday, you know, there are no NCAA games yet until Thursday.
Except for the two play-in.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. If so, I didn't see what network has them.
I don't know. I know that Siri, that, you know, that it's being done on radio by, drawing a blank, Westwood One are covering those games. That's not TV, so I don't know.
Right.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Your comment, Teresa, about women's basketball is really true.
Right.
It's really, really true. You know, I mean, speaking for me as a, you know, as an old guy, I didn't really start following women's basketball until 4 or 5 years ago when all of a sudden I followed University of Connecticut sort of because they were, I mean, Connecticut. You know, and those teams like that, but not, you know, from a distance, but over the past 4 or 5 years, during the playoffs, I watched them because they're exciting. And, you know, the past few years have been really fabulous games. So,
you know it.
Hail to the women and the marketing and all that stuff. They're doing great things.
Thank you, Teresa. Anybody else, Chanel?
Not currently, but I will let you know.
Okay. What do you guys think about Justin Fields going to the Steelers?
He'll have a nice warm seat on the bench for most of the season.
Well, it's a steal for the Steelers.
Well, Russell Wilson is going to have to lose that starting job before they give Fields a chance. One of the things I heard the other day before he was traded is no one questions his athleticism, but the issue is in his head. He doesn't make quick decisions. He doesn't see the field rapidly enough. And Mike Tomlin, I don't know, you can bring someone's physical talents out. Can you help a quarterback's mental processes? You know, it's not like he's a rookie. The league's too fast for him. He's been in the league 4 years, for Pete's sake.
Is it four years or two?
No, he's been.
I think this is going to be his fourth coming up. I think he and Mac Jones.
Fourth coming up.
The hope, I suppose, is that Russell Wilson will play for a couple of years. Fields will primarily ride the bench, and he'll learn, and maybe he'll be able to, you know. I mean, there's a whole conversation that's been going on ESPN Radio about maybe many of these quarterbacks are starting, you know, they shouldn't be starting on game one of their career. You know, in the old days, there are very few quarterbacks who started for the first year or two, and then they picked it up and they became really, really good.
Tom Brady didn't.
Yeah. So.
Wilson only has a 1 year contract. So.
Right.
His tenure is probably performance based.
That's probably true.
But it's amazing how little Pittsburgh had to get for both these quarterbacks. You know, I mean, I had to give away. You know, it's, you know, a late round draft pick and like $4 million or something. You know, it's not a lot.
There is a quarterback in the NFL that I feel sorry for. His name is Justin Herbert.
Hmm.
They cut Mike Williams. They traded Keenan Allen. Caleb is going to have some good guys to throw to for the Bears, but I don't know who Justin Herbert's going to throw to next year. Their top two receivers are gone.
Well, it's said that the draft will be full of good receivers.
Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, but with few exceptions, Michael, rookie receivers have a lot more difficulty adjusting than rookie running backs. So
yeah, it takes time.
So they've got this kid Johnston, who was their first or second round pick. But if they're expecting him to pick up the slack next year, it may be a long season for Harbaugh and Justin Herbert.
I was just going to say, they have the offensive genius.
Yeah.
I thought he was more of a defensive guy, Harbaugh, anyway, isn't he?
He's an offensive guy.
Offensive.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
He played quarterback, so.
Yeah.
I know, his Michigan teams, you know, were very, very good defensively. And you know, offensively, they were good, but they weren't fabulous.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, that's because Jim Harbaugh came from the old Chicago Bears school. I mean, you passed when you had to, but you relied on your defense, and that was, you know, he wasn't a great NFL quarterback. He was what they didn't call him in those days. They call him now. He was a game manager when he played for the Bears, and he was a pretty good one. But they relied on defense, and I think that Michigan relied on defense, although they had J.J. McCarthy, who's clearly going to be a first-round pick by somebody this April.
And it is said that McCarthy is cut from Harbaugh mold.
The thing about McCarthy, there's a whole lot of conversation about how good is he actually. You know, is he worth the top? You know, some people are thinking he's going to go as high as number five in the draft. You know, and I don't follow this with great closeness, but that strikes me as awfully high for a guy who, you know, was a good game manager, but, you know, it didn't come across to me as like a fabulous quarterback.
What I heard this morning is that Minnesota, which now has two first round picks and may package him to move up to get Arizona's pick, that Minnesota might draft McCarthy to sit behind Sam Darnold for, if not the whole season, the good chunk of the season, and he'd be the one to step in.
Well, Sam Darnold's not, is is not a great role model for a quarterback. I mean, he's not had
No. His best days were as our quarterback in USC,
exactly.
But he never panned out in the pros.
Well, I think part of it's because he was with a terrible organization.
Jet.
The Jets.
Well, that was the article I saw that said that it wasn't his fault. It was the organizations that he was a part of. So they think he's going to get new life in.
They've said that they've said that every year.
True. No, it's true. They said it every year. It comes to a point where you got.
Is this his third or fourth team since he got drafted?
I think the third, but I could do it.
How about Flacco going to the Colts?
He'll be a good backup for Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
How good will it
be? You talked about the Chargers and Justin Herbert. You know, I'm here crying over all of the people that have moved from Dallas to Washington.
Well, and from the Giants to Philadelphia, for that matter. That's a different
company. My goodness.
So, yes, I was going to ask you about Dallas, Michael, because they've lost a lot of people, a lot of players, and how do they rebuild? I mean, what are they doing? What have you heard?
Very interesting, and Jerry and Steve's excuse is salary cap.
Right.
So they restructured Dak's contract, but it only saved them a little money. They cut Michael Gallup. That saved them a little money. But they didn't have enough money to pay for their draft class. So now they've got enough room to pay for the draft class, but they're still losing veteran players. So it's going to be a long season for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and they're going to have to draft a running back because clearly they didn't even seriously go after Derrick Henry. And I think he would have been perfect for Dallas.
I think he would have too, but he landed in a good spot.
Oh, yes, he did. he's going to be very high on my fantasy draft board in August because I think he's going to get 15 touchdowns. Baltimore.
Oh, Baltimore. That's right. Thank you. I forgot.
Yeah.
That's a good place for him. You're right. It's a very good place for him. Yeah. I mean, you know, you think about the NFC East, right? You know, a few years ago, they were terrible. All the four teams were terrible. And then they got really good, really fast. And especially, well, was it last year or 2 years ago? The Giants and the Eagles and the Cowboys all made the playoffs and they were all pretty good teams. And then they fall up and now it's back to where it was 5 years ago, the NFC East. I mean, who's any good?
I think Washington's going to move forward. Quinn, I think he's putting together a pretty good team over there. Philadelphia has strengthened itself. So it's pretty.
Philly's going to win the East.
Yeah. But the funny on that is Kenny Pickett, you know, he was upset because Russell Wilson was coming and apparently his off the field antics did not please the Steelers.
Yep.
So they got rid of him.
And this is your, I'm sorry. Just saying your 10 minute mark.
Thank you, Chanel.
Okay.
Go ahead, Michael.
I'm going to finish this sentence. It was said that Philly got him so cheap that his backup to Jalen Hurts, his backup role to Jalen Hurts may not be secure.
Well, I heard, I think Colin said this morning it's the guy who is with Colin who does his news segment that Pickett's first 3 years at Pittsburgh weren't all that good with the Panthers. And he had a very good senior year that elevated him, but clearly that was an aberration. It wasn't, you know, what he was going to do for a career. So, you know, Pickett's another, you know, he's going to be a bench warmer and yeah, I think the Eagles are going to win that division. And I think you don't have to worry about Dallas finishing last, Michael. I think the Giants have a lock on fourth place in that division.
I think you're right. I think the Giants are going to be absolutely pathetic this year. They were pathetic last year too, of course, but.
And they don't have Saquon.
No, they don't have Saquon. No,
he went to Philly. And I couldn't understand why Singletary left the Texans, the team that's on the rise, to go to the Giants. That puzzled me.
Yeah, and Singletary is on the backside of his career.
Yeah, probably true. But they did get Mixon. The Texans got Mixon.
Yep.
But they still need a good backup. They don't have one. But
well, the AFC looks stacked again. You know, it's the same. You know, with you know Houston and Baltimore and Kansas City and who am I forgetting? Miami is pretty good. Buffalo is pretty good.
Don't count out the Bengals if the Bengals stays healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. Yeah, those are you know, and I'm sure there are teams I'm forgetting that look really, really solid. I do not, but you notice I don't include the Jets in that list of teams.
Nor should you.
How about Jacksonville?
Jacksonville. Well, I mean, Jacksonville, it's hard to read Jacksonville, right? I mean, they had a great first three quarters of the season and then they fell apart, the last five or six games. So I don't know.
Well, But now, Peter.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the Jets. I mean, I know Rodgers is a little old, but he got an old stalwart at left tackle to help block for him, too.
Yeah. Tyron.
I'm not even, let's leave aside only to mention that he was actually being considered for vice president for
Mr. Yeah, Bobby Kennedy's running the team, I know. Along with Jesse the Body.
Yeah.
That in itself is amazing to me, but beyond, I won't go any further than that.
Although Jesse the Body was in politics already, so that's not as unusual.
Well, Jesse, you know, in addition to being a good fake wrestler, which is a fake sport, apparently was a good governor of Minnesota. I don't want to get too deep down political politics, but
I was actually kind of hoping Aaron would be the Veep because he could take Bobby Kennedy and they could make their decisions in a dark, quiet room.
Yes.
Rodgers is used to dark, quiet rooms.
Dark.
Yeah.
A whole week.
Yeah.
Maybe a whole year. They could just sort of stay out of, anyway, I can't take the Jets seriously. I mean, in the first place, Rodgers is injury prone. Probably he won't get injured after the first four plays next year, but his chance of staying healthy for an entire year, I think, is really, really small.
Didn't they get Tyrod Taylor? Isn't that where he landed? Tyrod Taylor's behind him. So,
well,
he's a decent backup quarterback.
But we're talking about the best teams in the AFC and the Jets.
I wonder what the Patriots are going to do. They just acquired Jacoby Brissett. Again, because they had him originally.
Yeah, they did, and he'll be their starter.
More than likely, although they may draft May.
They still don't have any receivers. They've got a bunch of 3 and 4, on the depth chart, receivers.
I don't know what's happening with the Kraft family. A lot of people are putting them in the same category with John Henry right now. It's crazy.
And who's the Patriots' new coach? Some guy I never heard of.
Gerard Mayo. He formerly played linebacker for them a long time.
Okay.
Which tells me that they're going to continue focusing on defense because Mayo was a linebacker, I think.
Yeah.
And the defense is not their problem though, Mitch. They have a good defense.
No, it's not. No. But, well, you know, Brissett has shown flashes over the years. I think he did, he was quarterback for part of a season for the Colts, if I remember correctly, and he'd look pretty good. So, but they have nothing around him is the problem.
So let's get back to the Rams for a second. You know, now that they've lost Donnelly, what are they going to do? I mean, that was a major part of their defense.
Well, they've got a lot of young guys that got a lot of playing time last year and, you know, their coaching staff seems to be able to teach and get these young guys to play very well. So even with Donald gone, Donald was not as good last year as he'd been in the previous couple of years. He was beginning to slide. So, I think the Rams are going to be good and they may have to outscore some teams, but they're certainly capable of doing that.
Well, I think the NFC West is pretty strong. You know, you got the Rams, you got the 49ers, And then you have Seattle who can be pretty good. You know, they were pretty good last year.
It'll be the Rams and 49ers. I think the Rams will win the division.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I would say the 49ers, but we'll see.
They could be. Well, yeah. I've heard a rumor that Debo Samuel may be on the move or from San Francisco. So that's something to watch.
I'll take him.
He needs to go to the Chargers.
Oh yeah, because of Herbert.
Yeah,
Herbert needs some help.
He'd do really well here with the Chargers.
Well, so and Bob, you mentioned the basketball season having about a month left to play. The same is also true. It just occurred to me of the National Hockey League, NHL.
Yeah.
Sort of around the same time as the NBA does, give or take a week or so. And I'm not following hockey too closely. I do notice that the Rangers have turned around and seem to be playing better hockey.
They are. They're playing very, very well.
And
the Bruins are hanging in there. They frustrate me, though. They lose a lot of overtime games, shootout games. But they're lucky to be where they are. They're still first in the Atlantic Division. And I'll tell you what, though, they got to count their blessings. They got to stop losing these overtime games. That's what they got to stop doing.
How many overtime games have they lost, Bob? Because the Kings have lost 11.
I don't have the exact stat right now. I'll be right back. I'll let you know. Alexa.
Yeah.
But 11, I mean, but the thing, if I remember my hockey rules correctly, if you go to overtime and lose, you get a point. And you get a point. So it's not as if you're losing totally, right?
It's kissing your sister. Yeah, Bob.
That's right.
They've lost 16 overtime games.
The Bruins.
Yeah. 16.
And I thought the Kings losing 11 because they're, I forget if it's Las Vegas or Edmonton in the West have only had 3 overtime losses.
Now granted, some might be shootouts. Shootouts don't classify. Shootouts go into the same category with overtime losses.
Correct.
Yeah. And it looks like we're out of time, folks. I hate to say it. It's getting to be that magic hour. I want to thank everybody. Next week, we're going to have Alex Friedman back with us. He's with the Oklahoma City minor league
baseball
team,
club,
the Dodgers. Yes, baseball team. They're no longer called the Dodgers. We're going to find out why. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Chanel. Thank you for helping us out today. Go safe. And hi, Becky. I want to say hi to you. I forgot before. Becky Frankieberger listens to our show. Go safe with God, everybody. Talk to you next week when we have Alex Friedman.